Is everyone on the board present? Welcome, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to our February 19th Planning Board meeting. Roll call.
Roll call first?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Call to order.
I apologize.
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, also known as the Sunshine Law, and JSA 10:4-6. Notice of the 2026 meeting was scheduled was sent to the Daily Record and Star Ledger on January 22, 2026, and published in the Daily Record and Star Ledger on January 28, 2026. The annual meeting list was also posted on the Municipal Bulletin Board in Town Hall, on the Town of Dover website, and submitted to the Town Clerk. As a reminder, there is no smoking in this building. There are two exits in case of emergency, and this meeting is not streaming on Facebook Live. However, the audio will be posted in a timely manner to the town website. A roll call?
Now we'll have roll call.
Okay. Commissioner Rivera?
Here.
Commissioner Miller?
Here.
Mayor Dodd?
Here.
Council Member Santana?
Here.
Commissioner Isling?
Here.
Commissioner Orama?
Here.
Commissioner Escarnio?
Here.
Commissioner Vizioli?
Here.
Commissioner Insera?
Here.
Commissioner Riley?
Here.
Would everyone please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Looking for approval of the minutes. Reorganization meeting?
So moved.
Second.
I have a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please.
On the reorganization meeting minutes, my name is not spelled properly.
Oh, let's fix that. We can have
fix that.
I will fix that.
Thank you.
Do you have the correct spell?
This shall we? Yeah. I have the correct spell. Commissioner Rivera, will we move forward with that, or I need to fix that before?
No, just fine.
We are.
Yeah.
Commissioner Rivera?
Yes.
Commissioner Miller?
Yes.
Your dog was here,
abstain.
Right?
Abstain.
Abstain, right? Commissioner McDonald? Also here. Council Member Santana was here. Commissioner Isling?
Yes.
Commissioner Orama?
Yes.
Commissioner Escarnio?
Yes.
Commissioner Vizioli?
Yes, with the correction.
You were. Commissioner Insera?
Yes.
Commissioner Riley?
Yes.
Okay, and also our regular meeting of January 15th of 2026.
Do we move both of those together?
I didn't read them both, but they can be
moved. I did separate meetings.
We can say all in favor.
Aye.
We have resolution P23-15, that's Dover Tubular Belt, Dover Tubular, 200 West Clinton Street. It was an extension of the resolution to extend their time. Need a motion on that?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Commissioner Rivera?
Yes.
Commissioner Miller?
Yes.
I have a question. Mayor Dodd can vote on this resolution.
He wasn't here for that.
In the last meeting, right? Yeah.
We'd like him to vote.
Well, I'll abstain.
It's all right. Commissioner Isling?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Rama?
Yes.
Commissioner Iskarnia?
Abstain.
Commissioner Vizioli?
Yes.
Commissioner Insera?
Yes.
And Commissioner Riley?
Yes.
Next item on the agenda is the town amended fourth round housing element and fair share plan, which is the HE plus FSP. Need a motion to that resolution?
He will speak.
Need a motion and a second.
Yeah.
And then
after that, he will present first.
I don't know. I got a second. Did you get a second?
Yeah.
Well, do we have to hear it first?
We have to hear it first.
After he speaks, then we will do the resolution.
Okay, very good. My apologies. Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Ready, if you're ready for me, for the record, my name is Dean Donatelli. I am the town's redevelopment attorney. I'm a consulting attorney. I also assist the town in affordable housing. I apologize. I'm going to make a brief presentation, and just if you want to note on your agendas and for the public as well, I'm just going to be talking about items 6 and 7 on the agenda. I know you have a busy agenda, so I'll try to keep it brief. And I apologize to the council members who are on the board, because I know I'm going to give you the same presentation that I presented to council. So, yeah, that's a good idea. Can I move it over here?
Yeah.
That's better. Apologies. So I'm here to talk about the fourth round affordable housing obligation of the town of Dover. It is something that's required from all of the municipalities in the state. In 2024, the Fair Housing Act was amended, and what the Fair Housing Act basically says is that every town within the state has to provide a reasonable opportunity for the creation of fair and moderate, low and moderate income housing within their towns. We have a deadline mandated by the DCA, which requires us to complete the process by March 16th. So we've got a lot of work done. We've worked with the town planner and the council. We presented several ordinances, which I will discuss briefly, that have been introduced before council and referred to you for master plan consistency review. And so what is the goal? The goal is to obtain substantive certification from the court, which protects the town from what's called builder's remedy lawsuit. You probably heard that expression. And it would come up in the event that the town does not comply with its obligation to meet the standards of the Fair Housing Act and provide that realistic opportunity to create low and moderate income housing within your town. The fourth round lasts for 10 years. So once we receive a substantive certification, the town will be protected from builder's remedies lawsuits from 2025 to 2035. So all the numbers I'll mention to you relate to the future, the next 10 years. So DCA has determined what the town's obligation is, what Dover's obligation is, as it has with all other towns within the state. And using census data and other population metrics, DCA has determined that Dover has an obligation of 349 rehabilitation units and 113 new units. So rehabilitation, what does that mean? Basically means that the town has to, with its Affordable Housing Trust Fund, which I'll discuss briefly, has to renovate or improve to today's standards underperforming or non-compliant affordable units within the town. That's 349 units. 113 units, that's new construction, the creation of new units within the town. So those requirements are addressed in the legislation I'm going to discuss for you briefly. I think the town is in good shape. We have been working with your town, Alex Doherty, who you know, your planner, as well as your consulting planner. So On item six on your agenda is the town's amended fourth round housing element and fair share plan. What that does, it incorporates all of the concept which I just described to you, and the 349 rehab units are not identifiable, but what how that's accomplished is use of your Affordable Housing Trust Fund, and the Affordable Housing Trust Fund is funded by new construction. So every non-residential project pays 2.5% of the assessed value into your Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Every residential project pays 1.5% into your Affordable Housing Trust Fund. That money is used to fund the rehabilitation of the 349 units which the DCA has identified. That's your rehab. In terms of your new construction obligation, the fourth round housing element and fair share plan has identified several sites to satisfy that requirement. The first property will provide 13 new affordable housing units. That's parking lot B. That's a future redevelopment site. It doesn't have a particular plan in place, but it's earmarked for 13 low and moderate income housing units. That's lot B. Second one is lot C, parking lot C. That is earmarked for 13 new affordable housing units, low, moderate income housing units. The third one is the New Jersey Transit Storage Facility. I know the board and the town have been working to try to revitalize that property because it's in center of town, and I work with the administration on that. The next property is the iron ore, which you may know is on Salem and West Blackwell. That's approved. That'll have 26 senior low and moderate income housing units. The next site is on your agenda tonight. That's lot six. That will provide lot six. I forget the block number, but it's known as 63-115 Bassett Highway. It's behind the Mill Pond Towers building on Bassett Highway. That will provide 17 affordable housing units, low and moderate income housing units in its first phase. And then we're working for Habitat for Humanity to provide four single-family affordable homes on Munson Avenue, and that will be a sale from the town of town-owned property to Habitat for Humanity. So basically, that's if it's okay with the chair, I'll stop there. It's up to you because there would be a resolution that Bill and I have worked on together for consideration of adopting the fourth round housing element and fair share plan. The next item on the agenda is the consistency review of the ordinances which are incorporated into the, Bill, way to go. I guess my recommendation would be to vote on the fourth round housing element and fair share plan, and then I can go into each ordinance separately. Perfect. I can answer any questions too that the board.
Is that East or West Munson that you're talking about?
West Munson. It's part of is one single family lot on West Munson, and then there is a subdivision of a larger parcel on the other side of West Munson. Three lots face the other side, and those will be subdivided off as I think they're half acre, one buildable lot. And there'll be four lots total, one home on each, and that's actually a bonus. And by the way, I don't know if anyone was paying attention to my numbers, you'll notice they do not add up to the 113 that were required. The town's required to provide. I should have clarified this, because they're transit oriented development sites, like iron ore, the one on West Blackwell and Salem. The ones on Bassett Highway, you get a bonus because they're within a half a mile of your train station. So that was strategically planned by Alex and the administration, Alex Doherty and the administration and your town planner, because you could satisfy your obligation, which is mandated by the state, by picking these sites. And bonus, Dover has the the good fortune, frankly, of being a transit-oriented town, and I think that we took advantage of that in this plan.
So by bonus, you mean it deducts one number off or several numbers off the total?
Correct. In other words, for one unit, you get, I think, 1.25 or 1.5. So for each unit, we get 1.5 unit credits against the 113.
And just for the audience, how many credits did we have or are going to have in so that
you... It's exactly 113. And that was our obligation. So, and again, that's over the next 10 years. I just want to make clear, it's not like it has to be done. It's important to consider. We've identified, I think the town generally has identified redevelopment as a tool for satisfying your obligation for fair share housing, as well as for affordable housing, as well as other growth statistics, like you have that Dover Tubular site, you have some residential sites, mixed use, you have the Newberry building, so there's a mix of residential and commercial. And by the way, I just want to emphasize the importance of that type of development, because one of the ordinances we'll talk about is your development fee ordinance, and I'm just going to repeat, for every residential project that comes into town, they have to pay $1.5 million, unless it's an inclusionary site or a portion that's not inclusionary, has to pay the 1.5% into your Affordable Housing Trust Fund, and the commercial sites pay 2.5% into your Affordable Housing Trust Fund. So that development funds, it facilitates the town in meeting its obligations for the rehab.
Quick question. Out of the Bassett Highway project, 640 units, how many are low income?
17, but I'm not going to get into that because you have an applicant. I'll stick to the affordable housing.
It's only 17?
17 in the first phase, yep.
First phase.
Yes.
And how many are going to be built on that first phase from the 640?
The first phase, I think, is about 120 units, I think, in the first phase. They'll clarify that in their application. That's item 8, I believe, on your agenda.
What was the number of units you said for the iron ore sale in the
26 senior. 26 senior. Yeah. And that's a shovel-ready site. So, and just to give, I don't want to kind of get into how the sausage is made, but we have a litigation before the court, which was required to do. Every town was required to do. And as a friendly adversary, Fair Share Housing gets involved. I'm sure your town engineer could tell you this. And Fair Share Housing is kind of keeping all the towns honest. They basically challenge. You don't have a third-party challenger other than Fair Share Housing, and they basically intervened on all of the litigation. So we had to demonstrate, we meaning the town, your administration. I want to thank Paola, actually, because she helped get all this stuff organized, and your clerk, Tara, and Evelyn have been great. So we have to make a case to the court and Fair Share Housing that these things are actually going to get done. So. Iron ore, we've said, it's a shovel-ready site. They have a redevelopment plan. They have all of these things, site plan approval. The other ones, they have other ones, meaning the parking lots. We've had to demonstrate that we've been in discussions with transit on how we're going to redevelop that site. So we had to make a case, because they don't just say, oh, you want to put it here, here, and there. We had to demonstrate, how are you going to get those things done? And so, again, all with the goal of, by March 16th, submitting all this stuff so that the court and Fair Share Housing can be comfortable that over the next 10 years, that's what we're going to achieve. I have to admit, I'm interested to hear what everyone says and thinks. The 349 rehab is a very difficult number to put your arms around. The state, and I'm being honest, the state, DCA, they use statistics and census data, densities, and they come up with this number. We have a plan. We have a spending plan which allocates $10,000 for each unit that comes to the town. You have Alex Doherty, who is your municipal housing liaison. Alex is a town staff, is a town employee, municipal housing liaison. The law requires that. You also have an administrative agent who is a contracted consultant who will take the applications from the property owners who want to take money from the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. They may say, I have a unit, I'm income eligible, I want to tap into the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. They'll work with the administrative agent. They can draw up to $10,000 from that Affordable Housing Trust Fund and use it for upgraded HVAC, roof, electrical systems, things of that nature. But your administrative agent, working with Alex, your municipal housing liaison, will handle all those applications and ultimately deploy all of the money in your Affordable Housing Trust Fund. That's how the rehab program works. The affordable housing new construction is built in together with the projects like you want to hear tonight, the iron ore project. Those are deed restricted. They're required to be built. Those units need to be done in the first phase. So the town basically said, or I don't know what you're going to say because it hasn't been heard yet, but in the redevelopment plan, the redevelopment agreement, it said, we want these up front because you're going to help us satisfy our affordable housing obligation. So this is why this is a little bit of a formal presentation. It's not the first step. We've been working on this a long time. We've been planning for this, and I think you're in good shape over the next 10 years. We put the town in the best position that we can, just selecting sites which are create the best opportunity, get the best bang for your buck, those that are shovel ready, already. So we've taken advantage of those.
So I'm understanding that the 349 rehab is being funded by the new construction at 2.5%
commercial,
right?
Yep.
And then you have another 1.5% for
residential.
So those monies go into the rehab that funds all the 349 potential.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And it's important for every town to educate the public as to that the money's available. So another part of your redevelopment, another part of your fourth round plan, the town is kind of a omnibus kind of plan. There's an affirmative marketing program, and your Alex and the administrative agent, this is why you need an administrative agent, because it's a lot of work, has to go out and tell the public that this money is available and how do you get it. Radio stations, websites, whatever. I mean, these days, social media. We have to get that word out and educate the public that the money's. It's not a scam. A lot of people. I don't want someone to come. One of the challenges you get is, if you have it applies to both. The rehab applies to both for sale and rental units. So if you have a landlord that has two or three units that need rehab, we don't want that landlord to think we're coming in to slap code violations on him. We want to give him or her the funds from the Affordable Housing Trust Fund to improve these units so that, don't hide in the dark and we're not here to get you and give you. We're here to work with you to improve the conditions of these affordable units. That's the spirit behind it.
Is there an income limit?
Yes, there is. So, and the one thing I should mention, I'm saying residents. So Dover is in region two. The state is divided up into several regions. Dover is in region two, and that includes Morris County, obviously, Essex County, Union County, and Warren County. Don't ask me how the state figured out those geographics, but when the 113 new units, I'm just going to say, let's just say they're all built in a week, which won't happen, but hypothetically, if you all become available, your administrative agent will have to put out a lottery, and they will go, they'll do it on the website, their own website. They'll say Dover has X number of units available. Let's say it's Bassett Highway you're going to hear tonight. They'll say there are 17 units, and then residents from all over the region, those four counties. Okay, it's not just for Dover. It's not just for Dover. Hoboken tried to do it. There's case law, the law does not allow towns to provide affordable housing only for the residents with it. It's been determined, the law against discrimination doesn't allow it. So a lot of towns would like to do it. They want their seniors, their vets. I know you guys have done a good job. I know the mayor was involved in the veterans project previously. So you asked about income limits. I can tell you roughly. So for the low income, it's 30% of area median income within the region. So they look, they take the. So I think that if I had to put a number on it, I would say that number, the low, is probably about $50,000 or $60,000 a year. The moderate income is probably $60,000 to $70,000 a year. Maybe it's a little higher. That's like workforce housing. Poor teachers and cops and firemen, you know, what are they? They don't make a lot of money, but they should be eligible. So the moderate income workforce, you'd like to try to get them in there. And there too, you want your own firemen and policemen to have homes you're building, affordable units. But unfortunately, the way it is has to be marketed to everyone in the region.
So who oversees? What's the process for determining who gets?
Yeah, good question. So there's where your administrative agent comes in. So the administrative agent administers your affirmative marketing plan. So hypothetically, if this 65 Bassett Highway is approved, those units are built, they will have to work with the town's administrative agent. Say we have 17 units available, that administrative agent will advertise those units and conduct the lottery. It's first come, first serve. They'll look at the income eligibility. You know, someone from, I don't know, pick a town, Mine Hill, I want to come in Dover. Hey, I like that building in Dover. They become income qualified, administrative agent, it's a town consultant. They qualify it, and then basically you're approved for it. There'll be a rental. That's a rental building. The developer would be required to sign a lease with that tenant for that income. And the administrative agent, for long story short, it's the administrative agent who administers. There's a deed restriction on those units that 30 years they will be income restricted at the way we just described.
And what's the process for advertising? Is it a common process so that it's fair?
They generally use like their website. You've approved, the council approved CME Associates. You probably know CME. They'll be your available administrative agent, and the other one is CPGH, Community Planning. They specialize in, this is their specialty, and they will use their website. They will use social media, newspapers. In the affirmative marketing plan, there's also radio stations, which is sounds dated, but that kind of advertising.
So you're saying that even though it's Dover development going on here, Dover residents won't get priority?
Nope. It's a lottery. And that's not, and we
who,
didn't.
Who came up with that rule?
Your legislature.
Really? That's not nice. Yeah, but it's considered nice.
I'll tell you hypothetically, not hypothetically, but doesn't relate to your town in Hoboken, said we're going to have an affordable housing. That happened to be new construction. It's been going on since like 2019. It was just decided by the state attorney's office. A resident from Jersey City, not a resident, an applicant said, I like those affordable, I want to live in Hoboken. I want to apply for one of the units in that new development. And they said, sorry, it was only for Hoboken residents. And they got their hand, the Hoboken got their hand slapped.
They got sued?
They got sued, and the state attorney, I forget the, it was a non-for-profit that we got involved, and they brought a claim to the state attorney's office. The state attorney's office, I don't know whether it was a lawsuit or administrative enforcement, but Hoboken amended that ordinance to say, okay, we'll give it to everybody. They did what I'm describing to you.
So all this happened because legislators passed this law.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the policy because I don't know exactly, but it's considered, there's the law against discrimination, obviously, the state law against discrimination. It's considered discriminatory for a town like Hoboken, I'll say, not to let a resident in Jersey City live in, you know, come in into an affordable unit in Hoboken.
I think Dover has a lot of low-income people that can use these apartments, you know? So why not cater to the community first?
That's what it, That's what everyone towns, that's what a lot, that's what every, but a lot of towns, I hear you.
So I have a question. So what's the circumference of that? You know, like,
does it four, the four counties I mentioned. Warren, Union, Warren, Union, Warren, Union, Essex, and Morris. And that's what your administrative agent will do. We'll make sure that those, that that region knows that the 17 units that they're building on.
So also, those other towns that have mandated building have to do the same thing.
Everyone's doing it. That's a very good point. We're no different. We, you know, I do your redevelopment. So I have become, over the next, the last 2 years, I've come to know your town. And I know it's a great community. I mean, I represent other towns, and they're good communities too. They all have their community at heart. And I was talking to one of the residents. You know, the Mount Laurel decision was decided in 1975. So that the Fair Housing Act was adopted, State Fair Housing Act. It's been amended. How many? We're on the fourth round now. I think this, and there was challenges. There were some towns that challenged the statute I'm mentioning, the 2024 amendments. There were 20 some odd towns that challenged it. That was defeated by in court. So I think the number is about statewide is like 200,000 affordable units over the next 10 years. Yeah, new, and that's not rehab. That's new. So if you do that math. Unless they're all affordable projects, that's a lot of building, and not many of them are all affordable. You know, you're going to get your set asides like the ones Dover, you know, maybe 20 in this one, 10 in that one, you know. So it's challenging. Challenging.
We only have to put it on our website to say that they're available, so someone has to know to look.
I didn't say that you only have to put it on your. If I said that,
where else does it have to go?
So it has to. So your administrative agent has to advertise it on their website. They have the. I think one of the things might be flyers in the tax bills is another way to let people know. It has to be affirmative marketing. That's one of the things you're considering, and that's a statutory mandate that once it's submitted to the court. That's and the court and Fair Share Housing are looking over our shoulders, saying, "Are you know, don't get cute."
Does that rehab apply to single family homes?
Yes. As long as it's income qualified. Yes, as long as the resident is income qualified.
I'm going to interrupt just for a brief moment. I want to invite everyone that's in the hallway to come into the courtroom and sit down if you'd like to. That way you can hear everything. There's plenty of room, so. Please come in if you'd like to. Okay, sorry about that.
I'm still open for questions if you have any.
Question regarding New Jersey Transit storage unit. Has agreement been worked out between the town and New Jersey Transit for that?
That's in the process currently. Alex is working with New Jersey Transit to relocate that storage yard to another facility. That's in the communication right now.
Yep. Then I can say that we did submit to the court and Fair Share Housing, kind of what we've done so far, and to date, they have been the court and Fair Share have been satisfied with that progress, and we can only, you know, transit obviously is a very difficult, you know, I've been to several meetings with transit, and literally there are 20 people in the room from different parts of the agency that it's just very difficult agency to work with, so, but we. That, to say the least. But the progress that the town has made in order to bring that property online, you know, there's a relocation element to it, obviously.
Interesting. I read in your report that you have just one buildable lot. What was that lot? Just out of curiosity.
I'm not following.
Out of 313, it was 312. There was one lot that was buildable. Did anybody else catch that?
Which report was that? When you say one buildable lot, I'm not.
Yeah, I read that in a lot of stuff that you have here. But
I know there's a lot. If you can give me a little more detail, maybe I
will.
If you mean, like, for example, Well, Lot 6 is what you're going to hear tonight. I know the application because it's a redevelopment project. Is one lot. I mean, they're going to be subdivided into smaller lots, and it's a three-phase project. But if you can give me some more clarification, nothing's coming to mind.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of information.
Yeah, I know there is, and that's why I'm here. And I'm available for questions. If the public has questions, I'm glad. And the only reason I'm not a big fan, frankly, of the Mount Laurel process, because I am. If you ever work with me before, I like to get results. And I'm a supporter of affordable housing, but I think that we're doing as best we can to work within the mandates of the Fair Housing Act. The court. There's also what's new. You may know, in case you talk parties, about COA. But COA has been abolished. So it was COA, and then it went to the court, then it was it's the DCA, and they also have now the Affordable Housing Dispute Resolution Program, which is a bunch of retired judges who, once we filed our complaint, it was referred to them for dispute resolution. If there were, we are very close to compliance. So, but it's part of the process, and it's part of being in New Jersey. You know, you hear listening to Governor Hochul in New York talking about they're trying to figure out how to address their affordable housing issues, and hopefully they won't start out like we did with Mount Laurel. But
so I think what's important to understand here too is this is the fourth round, right? And so we're here tonight. We're going to be talking about the Bassett Highway project, which in 2006 was approved for 350 units. That's when COA came in and they changed the criteria from 1 in every 8 to 1 in every 5. So 20% of every project at that point had to go low income. And that basically killed that project because at that point it wasn't cost effective for a developer to build a project. And then Fair Share Housing stepped in and filed a lawsuit against that project to stop it. And so we are now in round 4, and who's to say in 3 years from now we're not on round 5, round 6, round 7. This is a 10-year plan that is projected. It doesn't mean it's going to come. Obviously, we're preparing to bring it to fruition in 10 years, but it could change again in a few years and be in round 5.
Right.
And so as soon as we have new leaders in the state of New Jersey, they may come in with a different opinion, and this could all change again. So right now, we're just trying to become compliant with the law currently. Right?
Agreed. Yeah, and also along those same lines, I think there's a 5-year audit milestone, and again, I want to reiterate the language. It's all towns need to create a realistic opportunity for the creation of a low and moderate. So it's not a guarantee, you know, guarantee. So you demonstrate that here's what we're doing. You know, we have all the zoning in place. We've done what the statute requires. We're going to give it a good shot. We're going to comply. And, you know, I think we're in good shape. But Mayor, 5 years, I think it's 5 or maybe it's a 3-year. It's a look back. It's like, how are you guys doing? Are you on track?
And
yeah, yeah. That's all. I don't really have anything more.
Anybody else on the board have questions?
So this would be I guess if we're going to handle them in order, and maybe we could just, if we have any questions on the consistency review, this would be a resolution to approve the town's fourth round housing element and fair share plan. Bill and I have worked on a draft resolution on that.
Things I want to just touch on the fact that we're going to be voting on the first portion of this, which is the Fourth Amendment. We're going to open this to the public.
Fourth round.
Before or after the vote?
I mean, you can open up to the public. The public is, if you want to hear comments from the public, you can open it up to the public at this point. But really, you know, where the town sits right now is, we really don't have an option. you want immunity from develop from builder's remedy lawsuits, which is what you definitely want, you need to approve this. So, I mean, you can take comments, but you're hearing comments, but there's really, it's, the state has taken a very harsh stance on this, and anyone that's gone to court to try to fight these things and objectives has not done well. And has actually walked a lot in a lot worse position than they walked into court. They've made it very clear that this is the way to forward, and we need to be compliant.
Okay. Does everyone in the audience understand what's happened here in this conversation? Basically, we have to embrace this because it's mandatory, and you know, we're listening to all the facts about it, and I'm just going to open this to the public. If you have a quick question, I'm going to limit the question to about 2 minutes max, and also I'd like to add that after 10 o'clock, there'll be no further testimony because I'm going to put a little time limit on this because otherwise we'll run into like 11 or 12 o'clock at night. So just letting you know that ahead of time. I'll open it now. Go ahead, anyone.
Thank you, Chairman Rivera. Before I begin, can you just, I'm not familiar with your rules here. What do speakers need to share with the board? Thank you, Chairman. And who will keep the time?
Our secretary.
Okay. And you'll let me know when it's 2 minutes? I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. I'm ready to begin. Commissioners, Carol Ruiz, 43 Park Ave, Dover resident, Wind of the Spirit advocate. I fully support the rehabilitation of the rental units in our community and of the development of affordable housing in our community that the law and the Department of Community Affairs requires. I fully support the efforts of the Fair Share Housing Center to ensure racism and classism don't impede progress toward affordable housing in our state. One of the reasons that a town cannot limit their housing to their own existing residents is because historically, towns did that to exclude black folk, to exclude Puerto Ricans, to exclude immigrants. So that's why we can't just have our own residents for the affordable housing. That's one of the reasons. I understand that the rehabilitation of existing units includes affordable housing trust fund challenges, and I look forward to creative solutions like some of the few I've already heard for those applications. This board of men holds great power in determining if and how we actually meet Dover's needs, not just the legal mandate. As always, the devil is in the details. Constructing 623 overpriced apartments in our already overcrowded town is certainly not the answer, nor is it the only option to meet our need. I encourage this board to demand an impact study for any development that comes before you regarding affordable housing and to invite the Department of Community Affairs, the DCA, to present to you, to your board, the many options we have to meet the mandate. Those of you that actually live here in Dover know full well that we are suffering a housing crisis in our town. Commissioner Islin, in his role with our court enforcement department, knows that families rent out rooms. I see you looking at me, Secretary. Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Islin knows that families rent out rooms to make ends meet, while unscrupulous landlords rent out entire houses. One room without access to the kitchen or a parking space for $1,000 to our most vulnerable residents, the new immigrant day laborers. Apartments of one bedroom for $2,000 and up is not going to fix our parking issue and is not going to fix our housing issue. That's it.
No,
that's good. Thank you.
All right, Carol, I appreciate your comments, and we'll consider those factors in the decision we make. Anyone else? Go ahead, come forward.
I was waiting until the laughter finished, sorry. Judy Rugg, 28 Audrey Place, Dover. I'm here tonight, I've read your agenda, And I'm concerned regarding the Bassett Highway buildings that are going to be happening. On that street, has anyone walked that?
The applications I heard right yeah. now was addressing the presentation by yeah. The redevelopment attorney.
Yeah, so I apologize.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
I want to hear your comments.
I'll do it later. Okay, thank you. Okay, great, thank you.
The housing element of fair share.
Okay, and I also agree, as do many of the residents, that a study should be done prior to the voting. So thank you.
Just so you know, we have a lot of testimony to hear about that, and okay. We'll consider all those things.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Maria Chacon. I live at 82 East Blackwell Street. I am here because I live in Dover, and there's a lot of people that are upset because there's lack of parking, lack of affordable housing, and 640 units with just the minimal required units that are going to be acceptable for people that are maybe earning. It is as a
respect to the plan that's being presented to the board.
And the plan includes
Yeah. And again, but you're addressing the application that's coming later tonight. You will have time to speak on that.
Okay, so can I speak on, all right, affordable housing? Is that?
Talk about affordable housing in general, sure.
Okay. So there isn't enough affordable housing here. I have sat up there as zoning commissioner for a couple of years. I respect the job that you guys have. I have, if you don't know, the planning board and the zoning board are the most powerful people in Dover, okay? You guys decide the future of Dover. Think about the community. Think about the people versus the investors. Think about you're deciding the road of the people. It's on you. It is recorded. It is on you. And don't feel guilty. Whatever decisions you make, it is on you. And I hope that you make the right decisions. Thank you.
Yes, you know, our job is to analyze applications and find if they're conforming to the master plan. We review plans. We have professionals on our board that help us determine some of the questions that we might have. And as a board, together we make group decisions. For example, taxes that are going to the school and things like that, that's not our job. Our job is the master plan, conforming, reviewing of plans, and those sorts of things. So hope you understand those things, because there's a lot involved, and a lot of people come to the planning board thinking that, you know, we make the decisions about property taxes and whether funds are allocated for school or for things like that, and that's not what we do. But we do have this power to review these applications, and I assure you that we try to do the best we can, and honestly, we all have Dover's best interests when we make these decisions. So please know that. Anyone else in the audience? Seeing one more?
Good evening. Carlos Matias, 43 Garrison Ave. Evening, board. I know some of you, some I don't. What I really don't know is exactly what's going on with this resolution that you guys had to vote on tonight. It almost seems like the board was surprised that they were going to vote on this resolution tonight.
We weren't surprised. We had heard some testimony about this already before and knew that it was coming.
Can you explain a little bit about what's so important about passing this tonight?
Yeah,
as far as the negative side for Dover.
Well, the state is mandating that Dover meets its required units that were determined by a third party, not by the township, by a third party, and a court agreed to those number of units. Now Dover has to satisfy those units over the next 10 years. The numbers that Mr. Donatelli explained to the board are the numbers that Dover now has to satisfy. The idea is, as I heard some people favor of low-income housing and affordable housing, this bill actually mandates that Dover institutes affordable and low-income housing as part of its building development going forward. So this is actually addressing the fact that if you believe there's a need for low-income housing or affordable housing, this is implementing that plan.
And that's all it's about? So it's got nothing to do with the parking issues?
No, nothing to do with this.
Anything else? It's just that.
This is the plan where certain properties have been designated as overlay properties, where the development going forward is being proposed to meet these requirements.
And if we don't...
But those applications will have to come before the board. A good example of which is an application that's coming later this evening, which many people obviously are here for. We've all heard comments about it. That application is proposing to meet, help Dover meet some of its criteria for low-income housing and affordable housing. So what has to happen, though, is what if Dover does not approve this plan tonight and we don't get this resolution approved tonight, we lose immunity from Dover's remedies. What that means is because we're mandated to meet a certain amount of requirements of low-income and affordable housing units, if you don't implement this plan, what can happen is a developer can sue the town and go to court and say to the court, well, you know, we're trying to help the town build these amount of units, and the town won't let us because they didn't adopt this plan. So court order them to do it, and it takes all the authority away from this board, and typically what will normally happen will be the court will institute a magistrate or some type of third party to sit over the board and more or less take all the power away from the board. And that person will sit there and make sure that the builder's plans get approved as drafted so that Dover is forced then to meet the requirements. So you do not want that.
I understand
you may,
that.
You may not like you may not like what's in front of you tonight, and I understand that, but what's beyond this, if this is an approved thing, is much, much worse.
But it just seems like there's so many unknowns before you guys pass this, like the parking issues.
It's not about parking.
How it's going to impact the schools, how it's going to impact the traffic patterns.
Let's put it this way. In all honesty, it's going to impact those things.
Right.
And the state's mandated.
So why do we need more apartments?
Because the state is mandating it.
From Dover?
It's mandating it for all 565 community municipalities in the state of New Jersey. Every municipality is dealing with this. Listen, if you have an issue with it, I don't disagree with your issue. But this is the one place to bring it. You need to take this to your legislature.
Legislature? I thought Dover had,
excuse me,
like complete autonomy because it was...
Not at all.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Sort of. Not really.
We did the best we can.
Yeah, I guess you did.
Okay. Anyone else?
Wendy Carmona, 59 Randolph Ave. I have nothing against having affordable housing, but it seems like it's a mandate from the state to allow developers because the affordable housing is not going to exist by itself. It's going to exist in all these 600 or whatever odd numbers that they're putting them all into. So the fact that you weren't letting people talk about it, they're all related. So it seems like coercion that they could build all these apartments and all these things and hijack our community by saying, well, you have to have the affordable housing. But to do that, we're going to let the developers just develop high-end everywhere.
That's a very good argument.
I saw the state plan over 20 years ago.
That's a very good argument, but it's the wrong place to bring it.
But they basically want, they don't want you owning a home. They want you taking public transportation, living in these apartments, and eating bugs. That's the global plan, and I'm not kidding. So this is just another way for the powers to be to force this down our throats. And it infuriates me. I'm not mad at you, God, but it infuriates me that the state is continuing to do that. Yes, we want affordable housing. Yes, we want people to have a nice place to live. We want all that. But why do we have to tolerate that the rich people can do whatever they want and we have to suffer and deal with it? Because the parking is insane around town. So many houses have been made into multifamily housing. There's no place for the cars. Traffic backs up enough on Bassett Highway during the weekend, and the streets are very tiny. So where are these cars going to go over the weekend? And everybody does have a car, because even if you take a train into the city, which a lot of people aren't doing anyway, you still drive around on the weekends. I have to tolerate the condos across from me park in front of my house. The houses that used to be single-family are now multifamily. They all park in my front of my house. They park in my driveway. They block my driveway. And I try to be friendly, but I'm just saying, I think it's very unfair and I'm talking to all the developers, that we have to tolerate this. To me, the affordable housing is necessary, but then it's used as an excuse to build tons and tons of apartments. We saw the plan. They want them here. They want them by at the other end of town. They build them by the train station. They build them on Prospect Street. They build them on the highway. Where are the cars going to go? Dover is small. Well, I want to know.
This board doesn't have the
authority. I know. But what can we do so we have authority? Vote these people out. Let's take a stand against tyranny. I'm sorry. That's what it feels like. Anyway, that's my opinion. Because I'm... That's all.
So who should she call? Don't
she
call
obviously,
her
legislature. Whoever it is.
The legislators vote them out.
State senators, whoever you're voting for.
Wendy, thank you for your vote.
I want to say a comment here real quick.
Yes.
Carlos, Matias, I was listening to you speak. I echo what you just said. And just so you know, what this board is doing, if we don't do it, the state takes over. And then people not from Dover, like us, are going to make decisions that impact. It's going to be far worse. So either you allow citizens of Dover to watch out for Dover, or if we don't do it today, pass this resolution, they take over. And then you're going to get people that don't give two craps about Dover making decisions that's going to affect all of us. By the way, I echo what Wendy Carmona just said as well. But, you know, like he said, this is probably not the right moment to speak that. You're going to have plenty of time. But listen, we're all on your side. Let me tell you. I live here, too.
What we can do about it to stop it.
1965, Dover resident.
Okay.
We there. We with you.
Anyone else in the public? Seeing none, I'll close it. Need a motion? On the fourth round?
Commissioner Rivera?
Yes.
No, Commissioner Rivera? Mayor Dodd?
Yes.
Commissioner? Councilmember Santana?
Yes.
Commissioner Isling?
Yes.
Commissioner Orama?
Yes.
Commissioner Iscarnio?
Yes.
Commissioner Vizioli?
Yes.
Commissioner Insera?
Yes.
And Commissioner Riley.
Commissioner Riley is an alternate, and we have a full board?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Let's move on to item 7 on this. Is the master plan consistency review of the AH item.
So I'm just going to be really brief, and a lot of it was already covered. So this is a master plan consistency review of ordinances that have been introduced by council and are being referred to this board. I can recommend, I've talked to your municipal planner. They've been reviewed by Fair Share Housing. They include model language, which is required based on the new statute. So very, very quickly, Ordinance 02 creates the development fees that I described to you, the 1.5%, the 2.5%. That's an ordinance, which will go back to the Mr. Rush and I will prepare a correspondence back to the council with your recommendation of master plan consistency review. So that's what the 02 does. 03 creates the position of municipal housing liaison and establishes your affirmative marketing plan, which we talked about already. Alex Doherty, guy's got enough work to do, but he's going to be your municipal housing liaison, and the affirmative marketing plan is done by your administrative agent. The consistency review of the 04 is the housing projects, which I refer to. It's the train station redevelopment plan. It includes Lot B, Lot C, and the transit storage yard. That's being amended to include those numbers. That's an ordinance that will, again, go back to council. And 05, that's your general affordable housing ordinance. Again, it has the model language. It establishes the income qualifications, which we discussed briefly, the affordability control, like the deed restrictions I mentioned, the administrative agent position, and so on. So those things I can recommend to the board. They have been vetted by Fair Share Housing Center, your planner, and can recommend that they are consistent with your master plan. This isn't a public hearing, but I know the public would. I don't think it hurts to allow the public to comment, but I'll leave that to the chair.
Thank you. I agree, by the way. That's why I opened it. Yeah. We're here for you guys as well. Okay, anyone on the board have questions on or comments on this portion of the...
So one clarification, Mr. Chair. The action from the board would be to authorize Mr. Rush to communicate back to the council that these ordinances that I just listed are consistent with your master plan.
We've done this before. Once you find consistent with the master plan, there's not a resolution, then I draft a letter to the governing body saying that the board found these consistent. So
one roll call or separate?
You can just do it by aye.
Just one roll call for all of it?
P25-06, it's 86 Millbrook. The subject property identified as block 1708, lot 1 within the the town of Dover's block 133, lot 1 within the town of Randolph, currently consisting of woods, rigs, and single family district. The application proposes to redevelop the site into a one single family dwelling consisting of 1,375 square feet footprint with the associated 12-foot wide paved access driveway and retaining wall. Site improvements consist of grading and drainage and landscaping. Hi. Welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, gentlemen of the board, Madam Secretary, and professionals. My name is Douglas Kins. I represent the applicant this evening, Antonio, also known as Tony Pochia, relative to this property. Unlike the testimony and the public comment you just heard, this application is entirely within your discretion and control. We don't have a centralized bureaucratic state agency telling you what to do. We come before you tonight and submit this application within your total discretion. This is a classic C hardship variance, and if the board will permit me, I'll give a little background about the property and my client. The property known as 86 Millbrook Avenue is a vacant parcel. It is located on the easterly side of Millbrook Avenue near the intersection of Comfort Court, and it's on the border of Randolph and Dover. In fact, the border of Randolph and Dover slices through the property at an angle, which creates two triangular parcels within what amounts to a rectangular parcel. The Dover side is on the northerly side of the parcel. The Randolph side is on the southerly side. The parcel in its entirety is approximately 216 feet wide by 186 feet in depth. There is no frontage on the property beyond Millbrook other than to the, I think it's the southwesterly portion of the property, which fronts on a small cul-de-sac. That's Comfort Court. Yeah, Boyd Lane is the other street that's nearby. The Comfort Court, where the property intersects, is only about 19 feet wide, which would create all sorts of zoning problems if we were to try and develop this site from Comfort Court. It would be very difficult to do with that kind of frontage, minimal frontage on the street. My client's family has owned this property since 1981. My client's father purchased it in 1981, and it was vacant back then. However, according to my client's father, who was familiar with the site, back in the 60s, there was a farmhouse and a pig farm on the site. In fact, if you go to the site, you can still see remnants of a foundation and some stone steps leading up to Millbrook. Apparently, that's what led to the farmhouse. But apparently, that was demolished in the 70s, and since my client's father bought it in 1981, the property has been vacant. My client's father deeded him the property in 1993. He's owned it since then. It's been 33 years. My client periodically goes down to the property. He cuts debris, prunes trees, removes overgrown bushes. Sometimes there's debris, and he removes that. He's paid taxes on the property for many years. He decided a few years ago to try and develop the site. The original plan that we had, and it was presented to, I believe, first Randolph and then to Dover, was a two-lot subdivision, which would have provided access to two homes off of Millbrook with two separate driveways, one located on the Randolph side, the other on the Dover side. The Randolph side would have presented much more complexities for development with a two-lot subdivision. Ultimately, we withdrew our application for the two-lot subdivision from Dover. That was done, I believe, in late 2024, and we had come back with this application for just a classic single one-lot buildable home. And we're here before you tonight not because the use is prohibited. It's a residential zone, of course. We don't need a D variance, but because of slope variances. The site slopes by approximately 34 feet running from Millbrook down toward away from Millbrook, and I guess that's in an easterly direction. And according to classic planning principles, disturbance of slopes is generally not a good idea. And so most towns, including Dover, have limitations on how much of a slope you can disturb. We don't want huge swaths of property just gutted, so to speak, and hollowed out so someone can stick a dwelling in there, which, by the way, I don't know if you can see it in your planner's report, but about 100 feet north from this property on the opposite side of Millbrook, I'm not sure if that's Dover or not, but you can see a bi-level which was put in sideways, and around the bi-level is a huge swath of steep slope that was removed, far greater than what we're proposing here. I'm not sure who approved that, but if you look at it, it looks, from my vantage point anyway, as something that probably should have been approved. But in any event, this is much more moderate in terms of what we're proposing. If we look at the variance requirements, the 15 to 25% slopes, which are generally considered moderate under planning principles, we have a total area on this property of 8,477 square feet. Your ordinance only allows maximum disturbance of those moderate slopes by 4,239 square feet. We're proposing 6,975 square feet. Some of that is going to be where we're proposing to put the house, which is located more toward the southeast portion of the property. Some of it is more toward Millbrook, where we would have to come in with the driveway. Your more significant slope is the greater than 25%, and the total area that's occupied by steep slopes that are greater than 25% is 2,631 square feet. Because that's a steep slope, Dover does not permit any disturbance. We are proposing 1,378 square feet of disturbance, which relative to the total size of the property, which is about 39,000 square feet, it's almost 9/10 of an acre, I would submit is not significant. Most if not all, I believe, of the steep slope greater than 25% is being cut to make the driveway coming down from Millbrook. And most of the impact, all of the impact from that steep slope, we're proposing to mitigate by virtue of putting in a retaining wall with landscaping. So that will secure the driveway, make it safe, and also make it aesthetically pleasing. The property itself, we have a house proposed with a, I would say, a moderate design. We don't have architecturals that we've submitted. We wanted to submit the approvals for approvals first. But the house has a footprint of about 1,450 square feet. So this is not going to be a McMansion. Total square footage of the house that we're probably proposing is under 3,000 square feet. And it's going to be on the site. Because of the size of the site, we're proposing the building envelope to conform with all of your zoning requirements. There's not going to be any proposed setback restrictions or setback encroachments. We're not proposing to exceed your lot coverage. All of the setbacks and lot coverage requirements will be complied with. The only thing we need approval for is the slope variances. Now, the board is well aware of the New Jersey state statute, which governs variances. The C variance, which is applicable here, generally provides that when, because of unique physical features that affect the property, strict enforcement of your zoning laws create exceptional practical difficulties to a property owner who wishes to develop the site, or undue hardship upon that owner, the board has the discretion to grant the variance. And we're here tonight, hat in hand, coming to you to say, we don't have an alternative to develop this site in any better way than what we're proposing. My client has owned it for 32 years. He's maintained it. He's paid taxes on it. He'd like to put a home there. The proposal is for him and his wife and children to live there. We're not positive that's going to happen, but it's a home that I think, given the surrounding area, would not be out of place whatsoever. In fact, there is, if you look again, and it's not up on the screen, but if you look at the report from your esteemed planner, Mr. McDonough, his photographs I mentioned before depict a home about 100 feet up the roadway, which is directly across the street in a large hollowed out section of property. But there's also a home just south of this location on the Randolph's and Randolph property, which is a bigger home than what we have, and it's got the same slope and pretty much the same location that we're going to have in terms of proximity to Millbrook. I think it's actually a little closer than what we're proposing, which means the slope is steeper. Now, I'm not holding this board to that. That property design and development was approved by Randolph a number of years ago. But the reality is that that house is there. It's aesthetically pleasing. There's no safety issues. There's no issues in regard to undermining planning principles or the purposes of zoning relative to that house. And we're proposing a house which is going to be smaller in size, further back on the property, which means less slope implication, steep slope implication, and that we think will fit in much nicer because our property is larger than that other property. Tonight I have Fred Mayola, who's our engineer, who will testify as to his engineering plan and how we intend to mitigate the engineering aspects of the steep slopes. My client is here to testify if the board needs. Now, I did have someone on call, George Williams, who I use occasionally as a planner, but apparently he could not make it tonight. He's not here. If I feel that the board believes a planner's testimony is essential, then what I'd like to do is present my client's testimony through Mr. Mayola and adjourn the application to another day to bring in the planner. If the board's inclination is that we don't need it, I would be happy to submit on the record that we make tonight. But I guess we'll see how that develops as we go through.
I'd like to comment on something.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that, Mr. Commissioner, and that's the first I'm hearing of it. We've had some esteemed engineers and planners look at this, and no one has brought that up. If our our presentation is unduly restrictive, then certainly it's something I'd like to know. I'd also like to bring one other thing to the board. When Mr. Mayola was preparing his plans and he visited the property, he noticed that there is a manhole, a sanitary manhole on the Randolph side of the property, which is south of, just south of where we're proposing to build the house. And that runs south to north, and there's active flow in that sanitary line across the property, both the Randolph and the Dover property. It would run behind where we're proposing to put the house. We're not aware of any easement as ever having been granted for that sanitary sewer. And as a condition of any approval, we certainly would be willing to give the town an easement. We would do the same thing with Randolph. Also, no matter what we do tonight, we're going to have to appear before Randolph and get a similar approval from them, though not as significant, I don't think, because we're not building the house on their side. And, of course, we also would need County Planning Board approval because Millbrook Road is a county road, and we'll need approval from the Soil Conservation District from Morris County. So this is just the beginning for us. It's a lot to go through for someone who's just proposing to build a single-family dwelling as opposed to a 665-unit development with fair housing implications, but it is what it is. But I would, if I could take 5 minutes just to confer with Mr. Mayola about whether or not there is an issue there with regard to our analysis, I would appreciate that.
I'd also like to hear from our town engineer.
Sure. Maybe we should do that first.
Is it picking on it first?
Yeah. Thank you for that.
It's all about the location. Where you want to build resides off of that road. Is there a road that leads up to the, is there a driveway that leads up to the road from the existing?
No, sir. No, sir.
Farm, I mean?
It's the back corner, that's it.
Yeah.
There's Comfort Court, which does not intersect with Millbrook.
That comes out of there, that Randolph housing development.
In fact, when we first proposed the two-lot subdivision, we met with Randolph several years ago. And we thought the best way to address it would be to come in Comfort Court. And they, in a meeting with their professionals, they handed us our heads and said, no way, that would never be approved. So,
how tall was the retaining wall that you were talking about?
That would be more appropriate for Mr. Mayola. Can you answer that question? How tall is the retaining wall? I would assume at its highest point. Yeah, Greg, why don't you stand up, please, and raise your right hand.
You swear a firm testimony you should be the board to be the truth and the entire truth?
Yes, I do.
And can you state your name for the record, please?
Sure. Frederick C. Meola, M-E-O-L-A, 28 Whippany Road, Whippany, New Jersey.
See, it went dark, when I started to talk. As soon as he says something, we have enlightenment. Can I just swear him in regarding his credentials?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Mayola, what is your professional occupation?
I am a licensed professional engineer, professional land surveyor, professional planner. I'm also a certified floodplain manager and a certified floodplain surveyor. And I've been doing this for a lot more time than I admit, but it's been about 53 years.
All right. Is your,
and I've been to Dover before.
I was going to ask you that. And have you been qualified as an expert in Dover and other towns as well?
Yes.
Is your license for all of your qualifications currently in good standing?
Yes.
Has it ever been revoked or suspended?
No.
Okay. I would offer Mr. Mayola as an expert witness in engineering for purposes of this.
Sound very qualified.
I think one of the questions from one commissioner was how tall is this retaining wall? Presumably, I think the question is at its highest point.
As you get older, you need cheaters.
You want me to hold this one?
The wall varies. Sorry, my guy's stapled it on the upside down. The wall varies in height from about 2 feet to maybe 3 feet. wall was just to take up a little bit of a change in grade to try to limit the amount of disturbance we had to do. And I know the section that Bill who brought it up, I know about that section. I was unclear whether or not, which is why we're listing it as a variance, but there's no way you can get to this property coming off of Millbrook Avenue. As you come off of Millbrook Avenue where we have the driveway, it's got a little bit of a flat area, and then it looks like it was filled at one time, and there's a very steep drop off, and that's what we got to go through. I got to get from that area down to where we're putting the house, and there's just no way around it. I had thought about coming in from Cutford Court, and absolutely right. The Randolph engineer said no way in hell.
How come?
Doesn't like it.
Not enough front. They told us not enough frontage, and it would create frontage variances, and they were afraid the neighbors on that street would scream bloody murder.
So this was the only option, is to come down off of Millbrook Avenue. And as was pointed out, we did, when we were doing the survey and the topo, my guys found a manhole, and then we started investigating it further, and the manhole comes from a manhole that's on Millbrook Avenue down our southwesterly property line, and then there's a manhole, and it turns and goes in a new easterly direction over to Sandra.
Wait.
Sandra Lane, and then it goes down Sandra Lane. We could not find any. We did research it, which is why we're willing to give the town an easement for it. Nobody seems to know how it got put in. You know, like I said, my guys didn't stumble across it, and I wouldn't have known it was there.
I don't have any services, Dover.
It comes from Millbrook Avenue down. I don't know whether any of the houses in Randolph are connected to it as we're coming in, but it looks like it's mostly Dover.
Is it sanitary or storm?
Sanitary.
Sanitary?
There was a recent application made to the Board of Adjustment and also to the Planning Board not too long ago for two lots over on Sandra Lane. Sandra Lane was actually vacated to the two property owners on either side, and there was easements that we got from those property owners during the application that they made for both Board of Adjustment and Planning Board at that time. So the continuation of that easement up to the Millbrook Avenue is a good thing.
Okay.
Well, the line cuts into County Road, right?
Pardon?
The line intersects with the County Road.
Yeah,
it goes up.
The line comes from Millbrook Avenue. There's a manhole, comes down along our approximately along our property line on the south, and then turns and goes in a northeasterly direction over to Sandra Lane, and then goes down Sandra Lane. If you look at the...
It's hard to tell from up there.
Well, we can't see it, but if you look at the drawing, my light doesn't reach that far. The upper left corner lot, which is where the steep slopes are on the map, you can see we show the line going all the way across and coming down Sandra Lane. So we have the manholes connected in there. So you can see how, you can see it. I don't know why this isn't reaching. There it is. It comes across, and then there's a manhole just off this page, and it comes down Sandra Lane. That's as far as we went. I'm sure it keeps going.
Did we happen to get a resolution on what is needed specifically for the steep slopes if it's involving a driveway?
So the driveways you can exclude from the calculation. I think part of what I was hoping to hear in testimony, what the actual ask is in terms of that disturbance number.
Which?
To confirm, you guys received the October 13th, 2025 review letter?
Yes, we did.
Perfect. So there was a comment in there. I could have been clear for your benefit, and thank you, Bill, for pointing it out. There is that exclusion in there that you can take the driveways out of that calculation. I think part of it would just be to go back and figure that out. I can't, from looking at it, determine what the actual
Understood.
Is. So
Understood.
The ask for the variance makes sense to kind of cover that.
Yep, sure. Well, would that exclusion pertain to both the moderate slope and in excess of 25% slope?
It appears that it applies to both.
So the reality is, for the board to pass upon a variance application, the applicant has to present exactly what variance we need. As I stand here, I don't know that unless Mr. Maiola can do the calculations now. But that's putting everybody on the spot.
Well, no.
Yeah, I don't think so.
My office had already gotten that letter and made a lot of the changes, didn't make the deadline, so that's why I didn't present it to the board that way, but I can get you the number.
Can I ask a question about, because the driveway is coming from the steep slope, what is the runoff potential of water? I'm not familiar with the homes in that area. Is there a concern about the runoff, the water running down the hill?
We did address surface water runoff, and as the board is aware, every site in the state of New Jersey has to be designed to ensure that there is zero net runoff of surface water. And I'm not sure what the drainage calculations were, if they haven't even been done, but we have proposed dry wells, I believe. Is that correct, Mr.
Yes.
Yes.
Can you describe their location?
On page 3, you have the dry well detail, and it's the area that was diverted to the dry well was almost 4,400 square feet, 4,397.
So the way that they engineer the driveway, you're sure that the water's going to go there?
So we're jumping around a little bit. I feel like we might have kind of went to the comments. Comment 7 kind of addresses stormwater as a whole. It kind of asked the question about what happens when the dry wells overflow because it goes directly towards that eastern property line. So I think maybe for the sake of the board, if you guys have a review letter that's kind of handy,
it might
be good to kind of go through that and touch on the comments.
We can do that, but I'm wondering if we shouldn't postpone the application because I can't make the presentation as to exactly what we need unless we know the extent of the variance.
And also the potential of having your planner come in.
Well, I would prefer to have a planner present, yes.
But if you'd like to, we can chisel away at that.
Sure, sure, as long as Mr. Mayol is here, absolutely.
Go ahead.
And this might be a note for next time. I think I heard in the recap from the attorney here that the variance ask is related to the steep slope. I think I would just ask if you guys take a peek at the lot coverage number as well. That may make the variance as it's presented right now. So I think there's a little bit of a carve out for that to read that. How the slope areas towards the lot area. So check that.
Well, I would assume that I still have to count the driveway and the lot coverage. And that means that the total lot coverage isn't going to change because we need that length of driveway and I need a turnaround area on the bottom so nobody's not backing up the driveway. So I think the total disturbance as far as coverage is going to remain the same. Just a question of what slopes we have to go into and what degradations of slopes.
I think the way it's written, what it does is it reduces your lot area.
And it may significantly reduce the steeper slope greater than 25% because most of that is caused by the driveway.
Agreed. Lot coverage and steep slopes. I think there's two things to look at.
Yeah.
And the lot coverage we're talking about is 4,595 square feet. The ordinance says 65% or 4,300 square feet, whichever is smaller. So we're slightly over by about 300 square feet. That's the difference we're talking about. It's not a lot, and I can't do much about it. You know, I don't want to start shaving the driveway down and making it 9 feet wide, having somebody coming down a driveway, and it's about a 8 or 10% grade. I want to give them enough room so they're comfortable.
You need to
come
it's
down
dangerous otherwise.
Safely.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna skip 1, 2. Because I think we touched on it. Comment 4 had to do with lighting, typical residential lighting.
It's just going to be typical little carriage lights at the front door and maybe a little carriage light by the garage door. You know, no, we don't need lighting on the driveway. We don't need any other lighting.
Perfect, thank you. House is intended to have an electric connection?
Yes. Correct? Yes. We're going to come from, we've looked at it. couldn't get an answer from the electric company. Basically said, call me when you're ready to build a house. But there's a pole in Millbrook Avenue on the other side of the street, right about in line with the middle of our lot, and we'll have to come from that pole down across and connect it to our house. May or may not have to have a pole on our side of the road. That's the electric company's call, if I can ever get them out there, look at it and talk about it.
Is there any chance to put that underground?
I can't put it underground coming across Millbrook. I can probably, if we put a pole on our side of the road, if that's what they finally decide on, then from that pole we could drop it down and come over the ground to our house.
To be coordinated with
you. Yeah, I have to, the electric company does what they want to do.
Understood. Stormwater. So the application appears to be less than the 1 acre disturbance, and I don't think
yes.
it's triggering a major development rules.
Yes.
We did ask for a pre and post comparison for the runoff, which I think is captured in the drywall discussion. With the drywells, the comment is the kind of overflow situation. Everything's coming down that driveway and then tying into
yeah.
the drywells. If it does jump those curves, are the neighboring properties affected at all?
Yeah, well, it's going to run through our lot before it goes anywhere else. But the other thing is, I went out there and looked again the other day, best I could in the snow. There doesn't appear to be any catch basins on Comfort Court until you get down to the next intersection. Because I thought if there was one up by the cul-de-sac, we could take the overflow 4-inch pipe, dump it right into the inlet there, but there's no place to drop the drainage. So the only option is to bring it all the way down to Comfort and let it overland flow into Comfort Court, provided the Randolph engineer doesn't have a problem with that.
A lot of hurdles.
Yeah.
One of the comments has to do with infiltration testing for the drywalls prior to installation.
Yeah.
Is there any questions
for that? We're happy to do that. I would have required it anyway, because I don't let clients do it without let's doing a test to make sure it's going to work.
Perfect. If it doesn't work, I think we've handled that in the past through the engineering department.
Yeah.
At some point, the expectation is still that the stormwater is managed on site.
Yeah, we'll have to manage it one way or another. But from what I could see out there, I think the soils, and I did also check the Morris County Soil Survey, and it appears that we got a decent soil. I don't want to say great, but it says it's permeable. Okay. So I don't anticipate a problem, but you never know until you dig the hole.
One of the concerns that I saw with those drywells, one's relatively deep and in close proximity to that existing sewer line, so I think that's a construction item that you might want to consider if you do revise anything.
Yeah.
We're about 11 feet deep on the drywalls, which is taking us past that existing sanitary line.
Yeah.
So from a construction standpoint, I just want to make sure that you're aware of that.
I think it's going to be okay, but I'd be happy to sit down with you, Steve, and we'll go over it again, make sure we're both happy. You know, if worst comes to worst, the best thing I could do is probably move the driveway further away from the sanitary sewer, meaning closer to the neighbor's back property, side property line, to give us more space in there.
I had some comments about pipe sizes and calcs that I don't think we need to touch on. Just kind of a will comply is what I'd be looking for there.
We'll comply. We're agreeable to any reasonable conditions that you feel are necessary.
Thank you. Tree removal. Early 2025, there was a change to the tree removal ordinance. I know your plan identified what was coming down and what's being proposed.
Yes.
Part of what I think you guys need to do is quantify that and to that new ordinance. There is
yes.
a replacement requirement, and that's not calculated. Right?
Yeah, I've already recalculated it, but the answer is yes. I know we're going to have to change it and meet the new ordinance.
Okay. Thank you. We touched on Millbrook Ave being a county road, so we've got the county application. My other comments are tied to details, which again, I think fall into the, unless there's any issues, it's kind of a will comply ask.
Yes.
That, Mr. Chairman, I think my comments are addressed to the point we can today.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And the client has been made aware and recognizes that we're going to have to go to soil erosion, assuming this gets approved before they start construction, to get their blessing on it as well.
Thank you. Fortunately, it gives you an opportunity to kind of gather your rosebuds and come back.
Right.
So that's a good plan, I believe.
Yes.
So We're going to carry your application to potentially our next meeting, which is March 19th.
Can you remember the
words?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine. March 19th. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Yes.
I hear all the proposals and the engineering and so on, but this steep slope ordinance was adopted to safeguard our environment, our trees, our vegetation, our water, and public safety. And I, for one, I am not going to sacrifice it at all, zero. So if this were to come before the board today,
we'll tell you to stop. Prejudging the application before the total application. You have a right to say what you want to say, but the applicant should do the presentation first, and then you can.
Okay, I just want to make myself clear.
You're prejudging yourself and you're basically conflicting yourself on board.
And we'll extend the time, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. So we need a motion to carry that meeting to this
with no further notice.
With no further notice?
I put the motion.
Second.
Commissioner Rivera?
Yes.
Commissioner Miller?
Yes.
Mayor Dodd?
Yes.
Commissioner, Councilmember Santana?
Yes.
Commissioner Eklund?
Yes.
Commissioner Arama?
Yes.
Commissioner Iscarnio?
Yes.
Commissioner Vizioli?
Yes.
Commissioner Interet?
Yes.
Commissioner Riley?
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it. See you next month.
Be well.
Maybe by then we'll be seeing grass.
Okay. Moving to our next item on the agenda, we have application P25, 90.5 West Blackwell Street. Can we get a line on
that? I wanted to cut you.
Okay, subject property identified as block 512, lot 13 currently contains a vacant two-story commercial building formerly known as Agra Environmental and Laboratory Services, which is a pre-existing non-conforming use. The application proposes to convert the existing building to a two-family dwelling with two three-bedroom units, which is permitted use in the R3 zone. Associated external improvements include a retaining wall, extended walkway, and replacement of existing windows. Hi.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, board professionals, Madam Secretary, my name is Rich Wenner. I'm the attorney representing WW Realty, LLC, the owner and applicant in this matter before the board. Mr. Chair, I appreciate that introduction as to the nature of the application. You candidly took away most of what I was going to say to the board before I got to the engineer and the planner, but that is correct. It is a commercial property that is located in the R3 double family zone. We are proposing to convert that property to a two-unit apartments with three bedrooms in each apartment, and there are several pre-existing non-conforming uses which we have to contend with tonight. We are not exacerbating those conditions, and in some instances we will actually be slightly decreasing the extent of the nonconformities. Mike Roth, is our professional engineer and a professional planner. He will be providing testimony both in response to Mr. Hoyt's February 16, 2026 review letter and Mr. McDonough's, I think it was September 23rd, 2025 planning review letter. Also with me is Mr. Fury. He is the sole member of WW Realty, LLC, so he is the owner's representative and is prepared to answer any questions that the board may have should it be needed. I'll allow Mr. Roth to go through the plan itself, what we're proposing to do. He will address the comments, as I said, Mr. Hoyt made in his engineering review letter. And then after we have questions from the board as to that, I'd like to have Mr. Roth put on his planner hat, respond to Mr. McDonough's review letter from the from September of 2025, and then, of course, answer any questions that the board may have. So, if it's okay, I'd like to...
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Sure. Michael Roth of Roth Engineering, last name spelled R-O-T-H. Business address is 10 Main Street in Chester.
Well, yeah. Mike, if you just give your credentials to the board, please.
Sure. I'm the owner of this company. I've designed and managed several projects throughout the state, just like the one I'll be discussing tonight. Both my licenses are in good standing. I've appeared before with 55 different land use boards throughout the state, including the town of Dover's Zoning Board of Adjustment on an application in 2020, first time before the planning board. Thank you for having me tonight, and look forward to presenting this project.
And can you just confirm that when you say both your licenses, you referring to professional engineering and professional planner in the state of New Jersey?
That's correct. Engineering and planning license are in the same.
He will.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to present Mr. Roth as an expert, both engineering and planning, on behalf of the applicant.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Great. Thank you very much.
Swap review.
Sure. If you could kindly flip to sheet 2 of 2, I'm going to start by discussing the existing conditions on the property. We're going to focus on the left view. The subject property is lot 13, a block 512, located at 90.5 West Blackwell Street in the town's R3 double family zone district. The lot is currently undersized as its area is 3,159 square feet, and the minimum requirement is 7,500. The property contains a vacant two-story commercial building. The former business previously obtained use variance, as the R3 zone does not permit commercial uses. The former project also obtained bulk variance relief for minimum lot area, lot width, building setbacks, building coverage, impervious coverage, and off-street parking. The existing building is set back 14.5 feet from the front property line, where a minimum of 18.2 feet is required. The east side yard setback is 6 feet, and the west side yard setback is 1.7 feet, where a minimum requirement is 10 feet, and the combined setback is 7.6 feet, where the minimum requirement is 25 feet. And lastly, to the rear yard setback is 5.3 feet, where the minimum requirement is 30 feet. So those are all the existing building setbacks. The building coverage is 61.4%, where a maximum of 25% is permitted, and the impervious coverage is 71.4%, where a maximum of 65% is permitted. The off-street parking requirement for this former use was 14 spaces, based on a gross floor area of approximately 3,200 square feet at a ratio of 4.5 spaces per 1,000 square feet. And no off-street parking was proposed, and most employees for the former business did park on West Blackwell Street. There's also a striped loading zone parking space in front of the building, which was used for the former business. So that's a brief summary of the existing conditions, what's on the property today. We're now going to look at the right view to discuss proposed conditions. The project proposes to convert the existing two-story commercial building to a two-family dwelling consisting of 2 3-bedroom units, which is a permitted use in the R3 zone. The project proposes to remove the shed portion of the building, which is on the right side, to result in a west side yard setback of 6 feet, which greatly improves the pre-existing condition. However, we're still seeking a variance. The combined yard setback is improved from 7.6 feet to 12 feet, and the building coverage is reduced from 61.4% to 60.2%. However, variances are still requested. There are no changes to the building at the front, the left side, and the rear. Therefore, there's no changes to those pre-existing conditions. The only slight change is extending the walkway to meet the new door on the west side of the building. That's the right side, and that's the new main door that leads to the second floor unit. The site's impervious coverage is decreased slightly, but it's still over the maximum permitted, and a variance is requested. And based on the change in use, the required number of spaces decreases from 14 spaces, which was the existing use, to only 4 spaces for this two-unit building. So there's a pretty great reduction in the parking demand. Also, the striped loading space, which was used for the former use,
We're proposing it to be a public on-street parking space. However, a variance is still requested since we're not proposing any off-street parking. And again, that was a pre-existing condition that we're making better. Lastly, the project complies with the maximum building height, and the proposed size of the dwelling units complies with the minimum floor area requirement. So that's a summary of proposed conditions.
And did you have a chance to review Stephen Hart's February 16, 2026 review letter?
So, Mr. Hoyt, I'll start at Section B. I'm going to provide testimony on the parking in my planning testimony, so I'll come back to one. I'll address that. Number two, we will add a new light for that west door for safety purposes, and we'll comply with the ordinance. Number three, no changes are proposed to the utility connections. We do have a decrease in water and sewer for the site. Under existing conditions, it's 750 gallons per day. We're going down to 600, so it's a 150 gallon per day decrease. Number four, we agree with your comment and we'll improve the landscaping at the front of the building. Five, we'll provide that detail. And then six, that rear door that you're questioning is the secondary door for that second floor unit, and access is just around the back. There's a concrete walkway, and then around the left side towards the front, there's a mulch path that gets you to the front of the building.
And as it relates to our agreement to provide the landscaping, that'll be in conjunction with the consultation with the engineer?
Correct, yes. And lastly, we'll comply with Section C and D of your review letter.
Yeah. Any questions from the board? So when I was a kid, I used to be a doctor's office for me back in the day. But I never really went to the back of the building. So but there's egress back there, and what's the proposed layout? You know, like, you have ways out the back of the house? And, you
know, yeah, so that door that we were discussing is that it's a secondary. So I'll just kind of briefly go through the door locations. The no change to the front door, that's for the first floor unit. On the right side is the new door that reaches the second floor unit. That's the main door. This door in the back is actually not needed by code, but the architect felt it would be good to have just a secondary exit, and that leads to the rear. There's a walkway in the rear, and then you could come down the left side and get to the front.
So it's just cement.
The left side is mulch. This left side is mulch. In the back, it's concrete. But it's not. That's a secondary door. It's not required by code. The main door to that unit is right here, and there's a walkway from the front that gets you to that door.
And he's going to address parking in another section?
Yeah, my planning testimony ties in with the parking.
I'll wait.
Quick question. Does this require a fire escape? Limits, since the top floor has only one entrance, right?
Yeah, I'll have to
and
confirm that.
And you're talking
that.
About three bedrooms, not one, but three?
Three. Each,
should it require a fire escape?
Each is a three-bedroom unit. I'll have to talk to the architect about that. That I mean, that would be a code requirement for construction documents.
Bill, would you know that?
I think typically only third floor and above need a fire escape. You don't need it for a second floor.
Even with three bedrooms?
Yeah, I think it's only third floor. Yeah.
That was
as long as you have an egress.
That's my question about egress.
Yeah, yeah.
You only need two means of egress.
Oh, okay.
Leading out, and then you have to have an egress window or door at least to
recognize
the exterior.
Okay.
But as Mr. Roth did say, any code requirements of the township will obviously be compliant, so it's going to be different codes.
Okay. May I proceed with the planning testimony?
Any question on this testimony?
Consider the fire escape as an icing on the cake to persuade us a little more. Right?
Okay, so moving on to the planning testimony, if you could kindly flip to the aerial exhibit. This was not part of your submission package, so we'll note this as A1. What we have on the screen here is an aerial map taken on October 4th, 2025. The subject property is outlined in green at the center of your screen, and the other parcels are outlined in red. We do have handouts,
I think we have,
so you can see it as well. So as noted previously, we're requesting variances for minimum lot area, lot width, building setbacks, building coverage, impervious coverage, and off-street parking. All these conditions were previously received variance relief for the former use, which was actually a non-permitted use, and now we're proposing the use that is actually permitted in the R3 zone. We feel that the C1 and C2 criteria can be applied to a request for variance relief. The applicant satisfies the C1 criteria, as this property and building has existed for several years and carries a number of pre-existing non-conforming conditions based on the size of the lot, the position of the building, impervious coverage on the property where there's no off-street parking. Although variances are being requested for several bulk conditions, the project removes the pre-existing non-conforming use. It improves the bulk variance request for the west side yard setback, the combined side yard setback, building coverage, impervious coverage, and off-street parking based on the lesser number of spaces needed for the proposed use. And viewing the development proposal as a whole, it encourages purposes of the MLU to satisfy the C2 criteria, including purpose A and E. For the negative criteria, the requested variance results in no substantial detriment to the public good, as there are minimal to no impacts to the adjacent properties. The properties within this block were studied and consist of the lots bounded by West Blackwell Street to the north, Prospect Street to the east, Elliott Street to the south, thank you, and Randolph Avenue to the west, which is just off the screen there, thank you. The subject property is the only business use within this block that is within the R3 zone, and the other commercial use within this block is actually in the D4 zone. The property is directly adjacent to other dwellings to the east, south, and west. North of the lot is the railroad property on the other street of West Blackwell, and there are no direct neighbors to the north. Therefore, the proposed change in use fits in very well with the surrounding properties, and the site can work for this two-family dwelling. The parking variance is mitigated by the available on-street parking that is on both sides of West Blackwell Street, and by converting the loading space for the former business to an on-street parking space, as well as the nearby public transportation, as the train station is only 0.4 miles away, and the closest bus stop is at the corner of West Blackwell Street and Randolph Avenue, just down the road. Also, the other five residential properties that face West Blackwell Street, so that would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, those properties do not have off-street parking. They use the available on-street parking on West Blackwell Street. The properties that face Randolph Avenue and Elliott Street, they do have off-street parking, which actually helps these five properties because it allocates more on-street parking that's on West Blackwell Street to those properties that I mentioned that face West Blackwell Street. And part of the reason why that these properties do not have off-street parking is a hardship for these lots, where there's quite a grade change from West Blackwell Street to the rear, so it's difficult to carve in off-street parking. Also, these lots are relatively small compared to the zoning ordinance, so we feel the off-street parking variance is a hardship, and we're also improving it because the use is less intense. We're coming from 14 spaces for the existing business down to only 4. We're creating a parking space with the loading space that was used for the former business is now an available on-street parking space. Lastly, the development proposal promotes the goals of the borough's master plan. We're proposing a use that fits in with the R3 zone. We're removing the pre-existing non-conforming use. We're minimizing traffic impacts, as we're proposing a use that's less and has a lower parking demand. Therefore, it's my opinion that the variances can be granted without substantial detriment to the public good, and it will not substantially impair the intent and purpose of the master plan and zoning ordinance. Shall we flip to the board planner's review?
I have a question. You mentioned 14 spaces. That was from the other person who was there, the company. 14 spaces where?
So the former business, AgriLabs, they previously got use variance relief and bulk variance relief from this board. I don't know the date of the resolution. But that was the required number of parking based upon how they were using the building.
Because as the chairman said, that was a doctor's office when we were growing up. There's no parking in that. You have the credit union that's there that you can pull in and park for the credit union.
Right.
So I don't know where the 14 spaces that you speak of come from.
An excellent question. And I think when we talk about 14 spaces, it's better to think about it as a generation of 14 parking spaces if they had on street park or off street parking. That's what the number would have been. Is that accurate, Mike?
Yeah. That, so the use required that amount of spaces.
They
proposed zero, and they got a variance for it.
They got 14 spaces that don't exist.
Correct.
Because the houses next door, I know people who actually live there that tell me they can't find parking. They got to be parking on Elliott Street and Randall Fab, people that live there. Those are 14 ghost spaces because that don't exist there. Real question. That property's in the corner. Across the street from that, is there parking there? Because I see the parkings coming from Prospect Street up. They start to taper, and then there is none. Right there. Yeah, you pointed it right there.
This is the bank property, you're
saying?
No,
come down there. Right there. You see the parking space on the left, bottom left of the screen? Right
down
there.
Here.
No, the other side. There you go. You see how it tapers into nothing?
Yes.
So does that mean nobody can park in that corner? In front of the house? Around the curb?
Around the curb when you come.
That's what I'm asking, because it's tapering. It's tapering. Yeah,
on the bridge side, there's no parking signs. But once you get further down, there's available on-street parking on both sides of West Blackwell.
So there's no parking in front of that property, only on the one side.
On the project side of the property,
so
correct.
Even though they had designated 14 spaces
that don't exist,
now they're requiring less.
The ordinance requires them to have 14 spaces.
Yes.
They applied for a variance, and we gave them relief from that requirement. There are no 14 spaces. We gave them the relief.
So it's kind of misleading. So when he says
he's trying to make a point that the previous use required 14 parking spaces.
And now we're only requiring four, so you were better off.
Let me finish. Okay. This use requires a lot less parking spaces, so it's less intensive a use than the previous use.
I get that, but you know, when you say we're going to do Dover a favor, we're going to go from 14 to 4, but never was 14. Now we're going to have 4.
I don't agree with that because I've seen the cars parked in front of Agri-Environmental for the use of the business.
I know there's a lot of complaints from residents there that they have no parking. People who actually live there, not on that property, because I know the people that live there. A lot of them are my friends, and they got to be parking way far away because they can't find parking in front of their house. So if you're telling me that at the corner you can't park in front of it, well then it's limited to right in front of the property.
So I just want to make a point that the 14 was for a business that was probably during the day, but now when the business was closed, those people were not parking there at nighttime because they go home. So now during the day, potentially you could have up to 8 cars, because it's a two-family property, where there is no parking already. And you can see on this picture you took October 4th, 2025, it's a Saturday, and there's several cars already on the street, and probably a lot of people drove off. So it's going to be a hardship because potentially there could be 8 cars generated from that two-family property that will be parking at night when everybody's coming home. So it doesn't really... It's not relieving us of anything. It's actually creating more burden because during the day, When that business closed, they weren't there. Now you're going to have potential more cars showing up at night.
Mike, could you address the 8 versus 4? So the I think it's important to understand where we came up with the number of 4 cars.
Yeah, the town parking requirement is 2 spaces per unit. So there's 4 required spaces. I think
I understand.
Okay.
But it's the reality is the potential could be more. You have a 3-bedroom, mother and father each have a car, the 2 kids each have a car. It could be 8 cars in this one little 2-family piece of property in an area where there's not enough parking.
Well, I mean, I would say based upon reviewing the adjacent properties, that there is parking on both sides of West Blackwell Street, and then and it's really the five properties that do not have off-street parking. As you get further towards the intersection, these homes do have off-street parking, as well as on Elliott Street. So it's, you know, we're kind of looking at it in a narrow view to demonstrate which properties do not have off-street parking. I get what you're saying. The overnight parking does change because obviously no one was, you know, parking overnight for the business use. But looking at the parking as a whole, we do feel it's a lesser requirement, lesser parking demand than the existing use.
During the day, but at nighttime, that's not the case.
It's not the case on the weekends either. You're talking, I don't know when these pictures were taken, at what time during the day they were taken. Go in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, people getting up, getting ready to go to work. There's not a parking space available on either side of Blackwell Street in the area where you want to propose this. Elliott Street, there's no parking. Randolph Ave, no parking. And you go so far up Blackwell Street on the right-hand side, once you get on Randolph Ave, you go past that, there's no parking on that side.
Mike, is there any way to put parking on this lot?
No. That's the hardship. And the prior application went through the same thing. If someone were to develop, you know, there's an adjacent lot that's vacant. Based on the hardship, the topographic conditions, they would most likely go through the same thing, where they're relying, those specific properties are relying on the on-street parking. We're creating one. I know it's only one, but we're improving the on-street parking and relying on it for this application.
And we're bringing the building and its use into compliance with the zone.
Correct.
So there's really no way for us to bring this building into a compliance with the zone, which is the R3 double family zone, without getting a waiver on the parking, because there is no ability to put parking on the property. And that's the crux of the problem, and it's just a result of the property itself. The building is built. It's built out, as you all know, as you heard testimony on, and there is no way for anyone to bring this building into conformance with the zone and at the same time provide for on-site parking or off-street parking, I should say.
Is there going to be like a major construction in the property as it is now? Like changing the design in order to accommodate the 2 apartments?
There's really almost no work performing outside. We're adding a walkway, removing the shed portion. Most of the work is inside, where they're going to be removing walls and making it in accordance with the 2
families. You couldn't restructure the building where you can build a driveway and a car garage? Because I've seen houses, probably, I don't know what length that is. I'm a contractor, by the way. I think I can redesign this and make it work. Well, you have a driveway here, garage, and we just change the structure of the building. It's going to cost money,
sure,
but you'll be able to get your 2 units in there with property. I can show you some of houses I worked in. They have a garage, driveway.
Unfortunately, that's not the application.
Okay. I can help you with it if it doesn't go through, by the way.
Okay.
Bill, I'm sorry, you know. It's the contractor stuff in me. Strike that out. Strike that out. I'm on a kidding, okay?
Let's get back to this. So that's the dilemma. Parking's an issue.
Yes.
Any alternative options for this building?
Stay commercial.
But even the commercial, even though...
Well, that's still better, commercial, yeah, because you're not impacting the night parking.
Anyone else on the board have any questions or concerns about this property?
Open it up to the public.
I'm going to do that. So at this point, I'm going to open this part of the meeting to the public regarding this application. Please step forward if you...
Good evening, all.
Hello. Your name and address for the record.
My name is Flora Valdivia Coe. This is my husband.
I'm Jeff Coe.
Jeffrey Coe.
23 Elliott
Street. We live at 23 Elliott Street, Dover, New Jersey. So the proposed building, once upon a time, belonged to 23 Elliott Street. Dr. Mintz owned that house and the lot. Like yourself, I remember going to the house, my house, to the doctor. In 1962, my father purchased the house from Dr. Mintz because what Dr. Mintz did is he built that little building, a little one-story building that and he re-landscaped the backyard so that all he had to do was walk out his kitchen, go down a flight of steps, go down another concrete flight of steps to go down to the building. Later, he subdivided the property, sold the house in 1962 to my father. He eventually went to Roxbury, Dr. Mintz. He sold the building to Dr. Patka. Dr. Patka applied for a second-story variation. They kept turning him down. Somebody else came in. They applied for a second-story variation. Variance, they turned him down. The water company came in about 15, 20 years ago, and applied for the second story, and the town said, do it, much to my father's dismay, because they kind of lowered the quality of life in my father's house, because now you have what my sister calls the pizza oven, because you have this brick wall that you won't look out. Okay, nobody really cares. The second story went up. But now this building wants to become a two-family house, and it's tiny. And I feel personally, again, it's going to lower our quality of life because now you're going to have this little apartment building like right at the foot of what would have been my house, my lot that, you know, but for Dr. Mintz.
It's right there. It's right by our lot. You know,
where they're supposed to have 30 feet behind the building, there's only 5. And then my father built a retaining wall there. So really, in that little area is just like a little concrete sidewalk. So if children live there, there's really no place for them to enjoy. You know, if you want to have a picnic, where are you going to have a picnic? You know, there's no yard beside. Once upon a time, it was landscaped so that they had concrete sidewalks going to the front. And it was really pretty, but with time, it's become really run down. And now the one side is really kind of messed up. We have a wooden fence there, so I don't even see what's back there, but it's kind of like overgrown. And I'm sure that they're going to do a nice job landscaping. But I just don't see a quality of life in those apartments. It's just like two apartments, just get people in there. And I understand the investors want to, you know, invest and maximize their potential, but I don't see a quality product going in there. So what I want to request of the town is that you maintain that building as a commercial site. It's not that far from the lawyer. I believe there was a lawyer there on Blackwell Street, and there's like a pet grooming service, I think, right by the up the street a little bit from the restoration service that's on Blackwell and Prospect Street. So it is a commercial area, and we really need more commercial.
No parking.
Oh yeah, besides the parking.
I mean, up on Elliott Street.
Right. They really, you know, it would create a parking issue because three-bedroom apartments, I would estimate anywhere from 4 to 6 cars that you'd need round the clock. I don't know where you're going to get them, but again, it's kind of like a quality issue. As I see it, you're not giving, you're not producing a quality product. I think it would be better maintained as a commercial issue, for commercial issue.
Thank you.
Okay? Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Good evening, Judy Rugg, 28 Audrey Place, and I would just like to reiterate, has anyone actually gone to that site recently? Because when you do, you will see the sign for the zone, for the parking zone for the business. And across the street, there is no parking because it's the bridge area, and there's a big sign, no parking. Where will these people be parking? Because there is, because we see it. We've been living with it. We know that there is no parking there. And to have someone walk up the hill to Elliott Street or to Randolph Avenue where there is no parking, and they're not going to be walking. They're going to, I'm not sure how they would do that, fighting for a spot, because their neighbors are already vested in the neighborhood, living there for quite some time. And, you know, they pay their taxes and to have the area to park in. And we would be disrupting that and the quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience?
My name is Julio Gonzalez, 30 William Street. Former New Yorker, I come from a place where they build a lot of parking garages, both commercial, residential. I got to the point while living in New York, I says, gee, if the Indians only knew, they would have made a lot of money with all of this parking. Many other places build garages. I think people should start considering building garages, multi-level garages. Alleviate a lot of problems. You know, nobody's making any more land. We have to make better use of the land. We all know there's a parking issue. I know people want to make a lot of money with housing, but here we see where you're going to put all the vehicles, both commercial and residential. More people should start thinking about investing in garages. Family size. Thank you.
Chairman,
I want to make some comments on that.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to say just for the record that I, as a planner, you know, I'm always supportive of adaptive reuse of existing structures. But I can't see how, considering the lot coverage of the existing building and you know all the concerns that we've been working on with regards to the parking situation, that I can't see how this proposal satisfies a negative criteria. I think that there is another way you can approach. I'm the principal planner for East Orange. I've come to the board in Belleville also, and what we normally do is, for any situation, we have very, very narrow lots. We have two families. They do garages and have tandem parking. Or one room is for one unit, and another room is for another unit. That's another way to go about, if you want to preserve this existing structure. So.
Thank you, appreciate that. Well, is that all the testimony on your behalf? Or?
Can I get a 5-minute break, Chair?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to call a 5-minute recess for all of us.
I don't think there's anything to reschedule. I think we should put the vote on. Is he there, yes or no?
Next episode.
Okay, this guy, yes or no? I'm a no. Write it down. I don't care who it is.
there's no place to put a driveway.
No. Unless you... Let me build it. I'll build the driveway. Tommy, I will build it, okay? Small, but we'll pack it like this. We'll make it. I'm born and raised in this town. I know that. I knew Dr. Mims. He took care of me. Yeah, but they get people weekend them in when they go there. So if it's a commercial, depends on what the business is. But it's but that's already grandfathered in, and it's not permanent. No, but that's grandfathered in. I understand what you're saying. That's grandfathered in. So whatever you decide to do with it, make it usable. But it's not the same commercial as the permanent. So I know three families on that road. On Happy and on Wall Street, there's no parking. None. I think throughout town, that's true. But that, since it's already grandfathered in commercial, we'll keep it commercial, find out something you can put there. You know, and then park and leave. Park and leave. I understand, but it's grandfathered in.
Okay, everyone, let's get this meeting back in order.
Yeah. Well, he's got to know what he's in, what he's buying.
So I believe that at this point, does anyone have any more questions?
No.
No more testimony?
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the recess, and we were listening to the board and the board comments, obviously, and members of the public. So at this point, before we proceed any further, we would request to carry this application so we can have time to talk more completely about the issues that were raised.
Okay. We can work with that. So our next meeting, we have quite a bit. Again.
Yeah. I think we prefer to avoid that next meeting. Yeah. April would be, I'm sorry?
Maybe April.
The April meeting?
Why don't you set it for April for now, obviously.
Yeah.
At least so they have a date, they have returned it, you can announce it to the public as well, so that they can know for the notice. So.
Okay, very good. So we'll do that. So we're going to carry this application to our April meeting as scheduled tentatively. So I need a motion to accept that from the board.
I'll make that motion.
Hold on before you vote on this stuff. I had a quick question.
Yes.
Okay. Based on the testimony you guys heard today from the audience, from the public, from everybody up here, do you think another meeting is going to change anybody's views?
Well, first of all, you just mentioned that they're actually looking at
different
project revising the application. That's why they're taking the
time. Okay.
So that you said they listened to the board. And that's why they were asking for the additional time to address some of the things that they can't address.
Well, the number one issue is parking. Yep. So if you think you can come up with a secret wand with that, well, then table it. If not, I'm against it.
Well, okay. They're asking to be carried, but
we got to vote on it, don't we?
No.
Second.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We got a second? Roll call, Paula?
Yeah. Commissioner Rivera?
Yes.
Commissioner Miller?
Yes.
Mayor Dodd?
Yes.
Commissioner, Councilmember Santana?
Yes.
Commissioner Isling?
Yes.
Commissioner Orama?
No.
Commissioner Scarnio?
Yes.
Commissioner Vizioli?
Yes.
Commissioner Terra?
Yes.
Commissioner?
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank everyone for their patience on a full agenda. Of course, you know, we have quite a bit on our plate here. The next item on our agenda is application P25-11. That's 71 Bassett Highway. The applicant has requested to carry this application to our next meeting. And based on our time and all the testimony that's going to be required, I believe that we all agree that we're going to carry this to the next meeting, so be aware.
To the March meeting.
To the March meeting, yes.
Let the public know there's going to be no further notice.
So there'll be no further notice. Also, just put on your calendar and come prepared. We will be ready. And based on that, we'll need a motion to carry that application to the next March meeting.
So move.
Second.
Roll call.
Commissioner Rivera?
Yes.
Commissioner Miller?
Yes.
Mayor Dodd?
Yes.
Councilmember Santana?
Yes.
Commissioner Isling?
Yes.
Commissioner Orama?
No.
Commissioner Scarnio?
Yes.
Commissioner Vizioli?
Yes.
Commissioner Intero?
Yes.
So at this point, I'm going to open the meeting to the public on anything other than the applications that were put before us. Anyone? Hello, Ms. Ruiz.
Hi, Mr. Chairman Rivera. Carol Ruiz, 43 Park Ave. It is disingenuous to pass the buck and point the finger at the state legislators for our affordable housing responsibilities. We do have the power to decide how we are going to create 89 affordable units in our community. Multifamily homes, single family homes, and affordable condominiums like Park Plaza for ownership are all ways to create 89 affordable units. That's it, 89. Not 600, 89. 623 overpriced apartments with only 17 affordable units is not the only way, and it's not the right way. And every plan that comes before you, please remember, our responsibility is 89 affordable units. So if you approve 500 with five, 500 luxury apartments with only five affordable, you still have 84 to go. So is that going to be another set of 500? We need 89. You all, I know, can do the math. Most of you actually live here. You know that we need parking. I know that many of you have actual experience, either as contractors or school board members or just walking around town, code enforcement officers. You know what it's like on Thompson Ave. You know what it's like on Blackwell. You know what it's like on Prospect Street. You know what it's like everywhere in our town. We cannot afford to build irresponsibly with pilot agreement, without parking, and overpriced. Our community can't afford it. You can't afford it, those of you that actually live here. So thank you for really putting in the work. I actually was impressed with your work today, Commissioner Rama. Thank you for that. And as always, I look forward to the next meeting.
Understand that, you know, we understand that. These are proposals that are coming before us, and, no one's come up with, putting 40 houses anywhere, but they are proposing apartments, and so we have to review them. That's our job.
And we can wait till the right proposal.
Maria Chacon, 82 East Blackwell Street. I just want to say that I'm very impressed with the energy about the parking. And I am glad that everybody realizes that we need more parking, that even though this developer wanted to build just a home with two floors, two-family home, everybody up there was against it because of the lack of parking. They're going to propose hundreds of apartments more, and I hope to see that same energy when 640 times three, so that's, how much is that? How many cars is that? How many kids are that? So please come with the same energy. Just don't say yes just because. You said no right here. Say the same for the next one. Plan it out right. Do it for the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing none, I'll close that portion of the meeting to the public. Any new business? Seeing none. Any old business? None on our agenda. Need a motion to adjourn.
So motion. Second.
Roll call.
Commissioner Rivera?
Oh, aye, or?
Yes. Go ahead, go to the
everybody
motion.
In favor?
Aye.
No, I want to stay here. Awesome. Little more.
You're on your own, pal.
Camino mano se anda ligero. Spanish?
No.
Yes.